probably a situation, I don't even know since you covered the Sharks, have you ever been in where this late in the season, they really needed to win a game to stay in the playoff race. Usually they're comfortable in home deciding if they're going to finish first, second, or third.
Right, at least that's the case the last 2 years. 3 years ago, they were in a little bit of a precarious situation. They ended up getting the sixth seed, and then they got smoked pretty good by St. Louis in the first round. But, you know, this is it's definitely certainly no lock that they're going to make it this time. And a lot of that is you just look at the month of February and the fact that they haven't been able to win at home as consistently as they have in the past. They're just 16, 15, and 5 at home. So, it's definitely a little bit of a nervous time, I think, around this organization. They need to start winning and winning quickly here.
What has been the biggest inconsistency for the Sharks this season?
Well, I think you have to look at the penalty killing, especially lately. That's an area of their game that's been pretty good the last 2 years, and they were pretty good on that end last night against Pittsburgh, but you know, they entered that game 25th in the league, and I'm not sure where it is now. Maybe it's moved up a spot or two because of last night, but they started last night 25th in the league in penalty killing, so I look at that. You know, the goaltending, again, that was good last night also, but that's been a little bit inconsistent. That's both Antoniemi and Alex Stalock. And really, you just look at the depth, overall depth of this team at every position, the goalie position, forwards, and defense. Their depth just isn't as strong as it has been in years past. Now, that was something that was telegraphed a little bit by Doug Wilson in the offseason, saying this was going to be a transitional year. They were going to integrate a lot of their younger players, and they're doing that, but I think they're not getting some of the contributions that they had expected and hoped for from some of those younger guys.
You know, there's so much distractions off the ice in San Jose in the offseason. You know, stripping Joe Thornton of the captaincy, they never named a captain, and a lot of people felt like, you know what, Todd McClellan's maybe on the block a little bit. The players had to come around, and a lot of people thought, you know, the Sharks came out early in the year and were great, Kevin, and people felt, you know what, they were really going to stick it to them, and it's tapered off. They still, on paper, have one of the most talented teams in the Western Conference. How disappointing has this season been for the Sharks?
Well, I would agree with you that when you're talking about top players in the league, the Sharks do have the talent there to match up with most teams. But on paper, after those top guys, I don't think they do have the strength to match up against some of the other teams. But obviously, Joe Thornton's having a very good year. Logachur, Joe Pavelski has probably been their best player. Brent Burns, at least offensively, has been strong. Mark Edward Vlasic on defense is one of the better defensive defensemen in the league, in my opinion. But again, it's the depth that drops off a little bit, and you look at the top teams in the conference, and the Sharks just can't match up depth-wise with those teams. So, you know, I think it is disappointing that the expectation always has been that to be a playoff team, and certainly they're not out of that yet, just 3 points behind. But even in this year of transition, the expectation always was to make the playoffs. So. If they don't make the playoffs, there could be a little bit of a more rapid transition, I think, than if they do.
And if they don't make the playoffs, the obvious choice, everyone thinks, okay, you fire the coach because you can't trade all the players. But, you know, Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau have not wanted to waive their no-movement clause. Do you think they would change their mind if they didn't make the playoffs this year?
That's a good question. What we do know is that Doug Wilson went on record, I want to say, it's probably on the trade deadline day last Monday, that he's not going to ask Patrick Marleau or Joe Thornton to waive their no-trade clauses. The situation or the conversation that he had with those two players last summer was, here's what we're doing. We're incorporating younger players. We're going to take a step backwards this year. Do you want to be a part of it? And, again, this is all according to Doug, that these guys want to be a part of it. And Patrick Marleau said that he'd like to stay here. You know, Joe Thornton, I think there's certainly no indications that Joe wants to go anywhere. And obviously that's the right of those two players. They signed those contracts. So, you know, could that change? Obviously anything could change. I would be surprised if it changed. I do think those two guys are going to be here next year. And frankly, if I had to guess right now, I think they'll probably be here for the year after that too. So if they're going to make some trades or make a big move, it's going to be in the summertime. And Doug Wilson has already kind of hinted that that's their plan. You know, a lot of teams are going to be up against the cap next year. We know that cap number isn't going to be as high as maybe originally anticipated even just a couple months ago. And that's where Wilson can come in and maybe look to make the big move. And really, he already did that to a lesser extent at the trade deadline when he got Ben Smith from Chicago for Andrew Desjardins. I don't think there's any doubt that Ben Smith is a better player, has much better upside, and he's younger, 2 years younger than Desjardins, with another year on his contract. So he already took a little bit of advantage, I think, in that situation, and that Chicago was probably looking to shed some salary in that trade.
Do you think Niemi re-signs in San Jose, or does he test the free agent market?
I don't think so. I don't see that happening. He was still good last night. It's hard to say that right after the game he had against the Penguins, because it was one of his best games of the year. And maybe now the trade deadline's over, and he even admitted that he admitted today to me that maybe the trade deadline helps his game, helps his I don't want to say focus, but you know, maybe he's a little bit in a better spot mentally now that that's passed, because his name was mentioned so often by, you know, some pretty reputable sources that it was out there. So I would be surprised if he signed in the offseason. I think he's had his run here. You know, this will be his fifth year. It hasn't happened for him. His playoff numbers have been, I would say, average at best, if not below average. So I think they're going to look for a goalie in the off season. Now, whether they try to get a Jonathan Bernier type or try to go that route, that'll be something we'll have to monitor. But I think it's time for a new looking goal, frankly, barring some sort of unexpected playoff run.
Interesting you mentioned Niemi, because a lot of fans in Edmonton are saying, hey, that's the guy the Oilers should go after. Kevin, you've seen him way more than I. Do you think he would be the answer to the woes of the Oilers?
Well, you know, Niemi's a guy, he's a veteran, he has plenty of experience, playoff experience. He's a really popular guy in the dressing room. And there's a report earlier around the trade deadline that a group of the Sharks veterans met with Doug Wilson, and they told him that they want Niemi here. They want to try to make another playoff run with the current group, Niemi and some other veterans like Scott Hannon is another guy who's a pretty popular guy in the dressing room. So, you know, if you're looking for a veteran that'll give you some steady play, I think Niemi can still do that. But his game, I think, is often a reflection of the team that's in front of him. He's not often going to steal a game, and he stole a game a little bit last night. And there was one earlier against Chicago, his old team, that I would say he probably stole it. But that doesn't happen too often with him. When the team's playing some loose defense in front of them, and there has been plenty of that this year, Niemi's not typically the guy who's going to make big save after big save and bail your team out. So, you know, Edmonton's still a several-year project, I would imagine. So I'm not sure that would be a fit. I think that would be a little bit of a strange fit, frankly.
What type of season has Logan Couture had?
It got off to a little bit of a slow start, and I think Couture, first of all, he's coming off of hand surgery. He hurt his hand in the playoffs, so that might have affected his play early on. I think he was a little bit disappointed when he didn't get a letter. You know, there was so much made about the team's leadership group, and the three players that we heard most often from management were Joe Pavelski, Logan Couture, and Mark Edward Vlasic, our young core, our new leaders. Well, then when they hand out the four alternate captains, Couture's not a part of it. And he was disappointed. And, you know, I'm not sure if that affected his play or not. But he did get off to a little bit of a slow start. He's been better lately. And the thing you have to remember about Couture is you can't just look at his numbers, his goals and assists. Many nights he's the guy that's centering the Sharks' line that's going up against the opponent's best players. And we saw that last night. His line spent the bulk of the time on the Sidney Crosby line. So I think defensively, in that regard, he's still been good. He's a good penalty killer. He's one of this team's players that I think they see here for a long time. And I think even as a leader, he's stepped up a little bit. You know, there aren't too many guys in the Sharks dressing room that are going to give you an honest opinion, even when the team's losing. But Logan's never been afraid to speak his mind and to tell the media publicly and obviously everybody else publicly what he thinks is wrong. So I think he's grown a little bit over that regard, and he's still, you know, he's still viewed internally as one of this team's cornerstones.
Kevin Kurz joins us from Comcast in San Jose. Sharks in a battle for their playoff lives, chasing both L.A. and Calgary. And really, it looks like it's going to be down to those three teams, although Winnipeg is definitely not out of it, even Minnesota, although one of those teams would likely get in. I guess there's a chance both could get out and all three in the Pacific and have 5-3. That would be a major changeover. Kevin, it's how have Shark fans handled this? I know you mentioned a few years ago they're in a playoff race, but they were never out of the playoffs like they are at this juncture. You know, Jason Strudwick, former player, still vows San Jose's, you know, maybe the second loudest rink in the league behind Chicago. He says it's an unreal atmosphere. Has the atmosphere in San Jose remained the same?
The building still gets loud, but the problem is the team hasn't given them too many opportunities to be loud. Again, you know, they had an 8-game home losing streak in February, and there have been more empty seats this season. And I think that's a little bit that has to do a little bit with the fact Doug Wilson came out and basically telegraphed that they might be they might take a step backwards this year. That was a word he used. He said we're a tomorrow team, and it's a team in transition. So, you know, I think that might have turned off some fans. Why are we going to come back and come to every single game when the team's taking a step backwards? But, you know, that being said, it still does get very loud. We heard it last night, and it's still generally full on a nightly basis. And you can't forget either that they hosted the Kings in that outdoor game, and they sold the place out. We're talking 70,000 fans in a football stadium that came to watch the Sharks and the Kings play hockey. So, you know, the fan support is still here. I think they are frustrated a little bit, and when you consider what happened, I don't think you can blame them for that. You know, blowing the 3-0 lead to the Kings, but not just the 3-0 lead to the Kings. It's years and years of playoff failure with basically the same guys. And I think, you know, a lot of the fans, just like a lot of the media, when Doug Wilson said some of the things he said early in the offseason, we expected a major change to occur, whether that was Joe Thornton, Patrick Marleau, or both. But, you know, those guys returned. The team's not in the same place that it's used to being in this late in the season. And so, you know, I think there's a little bit of a staleness in regards to some of the players on the team. So, you know, if they miss the playoffs, it's going to be interesting to see what the building looks like next year. The team's raising ticket prices, which is a little strange timing to me. I think that they're raising ticket prices this year. But, you know, there's still a lot of fan support in this area. And again, you just have to look at that outdoor game and see the fact that they packed it with 70,000 fans.
Yeah, it looked like an unbelievable experience, and just the whole layout was fantastic.
Yeah, it was a really well done event, and you know, that was all the more disappointing that they lost. I think that would have been a great opportunity for them to give a little bit of a jolt to their fan base. You know, here's your hated rival, and they lost 2-1, so they didn't exactly do themselves any favors in that regard by not winning the game.
Well, Kevin, enjoy the playoff race. Many Edmontonians rather jealous. Their team, once again, is out of the playoffs officially on March 9th. And enjoy it. Five teams battling for two playoff spots. Should be fun.
Okay. Thanks, Jason. Anytime. Enjoy talking to you.